the checkout time here is noon. The latest is 1 p.m. If you're later than that, I guess there's a fee for, not for the conference, but for the rooms if you're upstairs. You can stay here as long as you want, pretty much. So I guess, right? Okay, so our 15-minute opening speaker is from Tucson. Please help me welcome Jason.
My name's Jason, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jason! We love you, Jason! Lots and lots and lots! And oh!
Thank you. I just want to thank the community for asking me to speak. I want to thank Roof. It's interesting, I got to see Roof get sober. He came into a facility that I was affiliated with a few years ago, and I guess I was thinking on the way over here today, and when I was sitting up here just getting ready for the meeting, like, it feels good to me to be part of that life cycle in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like, my life cycle was I got here busted, broken, like a lot of people, get this thing, this buzz going, the energy that I felt here in this conference this weekend, and then I start to go out and practice these principles, get a little bit of purpose in my life, have actually something good to bring to somebody, which is this message of hope. And then you get to carry that to somebody, and then they carry it to somebody, and then, you know, you watch these lives just kind of take shape. And to see Ruth do that this weekend was pretty, it's pretty powerful for me. You know, this gig for me is not, it's not like I was like feeling kind of bad, and I wasn't really okay with the quality of my life, so I decided that Alcoholics Anonymous had something that maybe I could benefit from. You know, like, what happened to me was I fought the system the entire way, had absolutely no idea. I had no idea what I was dealing with. I had no idea the power, the enormity of alcohol. I had no idea what that was going to do to my life. You know, and as it was doing it to my life, I didn't have the capacity to say, or the willingness to say, it is the alcohol. Because I think for me it was too scary to think what life would be like, you know, without booze. I mean, when I got sober, the proposition of letting go of drinking is like the equivalent to me of saying, you basically want me to get rid of my left arm. That's what you asked me to do. You know, that's kind of the seriousness of it. So I feel really grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel grateful that I get to live this life today. You know, I get to be here. I get to show up clean. I get to show up nice clothes on. I get to show up fairly healthy for the most part. I mean that mentally, really, but you know, because I always showed up dirty. I always showed up, you know, whether, and maybe my clothes were clean, but my mind was dirty, you know, and I always showed up with ulterior motives, and I always showed up looking to see what I could take, you know, and there was no difference coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here because I felt like I could give back. You know, Bill Wilson writes in the 12 and 12 that we get here by circumstance, not by virtue. And that's true for me, you know. I had circumstances. I had a plan, you know. I had a girlfriend for about 2 years before I got sober. We did this dance back and forth, you know, the dance where it's like, you need to quit drinking, yeah, I'll quit. If you don't quit, I'm going to leave, okay. And she said, I'm done, about probably 1,000 times, you know, and there was this one time she said, I'm done, and it was like, wow, there's something. It was the same words, you know, but it came out with that kind of a little bit different conviction. And I knew she was done, and I knew I didn't want that, so I had to figure out a plan. So I figured, well, the only thing she really wants me to do is get sober. I mean, that's really the only problem. So I'm going to go to AA, and if I can convince her that I'm going to get sober without any intention of actually getting sober, then I can get her back. You know, that's what my plan was. So it was really to come here, trick somebody into being my sponsor. And I had it all planned out. You know, I was going to have them meet at the coffee shop because we drink coffee a lot. And like, oh, this is my sponsor. And oh, yeah, I'm really getting sober. And so, by the way, what are you doing Friday night? You know what I mean? So, and what's interesting about my plan is that the script got flipped on me, and I got tricked into getting sober. You know what I mean? Like, that's what happened. A man spoke at a meeting in Tucson, and I want to thank Tucson Recovery for my sobriety in my life, because this happens a lot, so bear with me. And it's okay for me today. Like, that's what's cool about AA. I can get up here today and have this emotion and be okay in a room full of strangers, because I know what it means for me to be in this life today. I know what it means to be sober, you know. And for me, it's a big deal. It's not, like I said, it's not this game I'm playing. Like, this is life. And but there was a meeting that got started as a result of people in Tucson wanting to carry the message, kind of like bringing young people to conferences and getting the awareness out there. And then this guy came from California, from San Diego, shared his story, and then I didn't know that he was the guy I was going to meet. I didn't know that he was the guy that was going to have anything to say to me that was worthwhile, you know. And what's interesting about my sobriety, how I met him, and when I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks a lot about prejudice. It talks a lot about having an open mind and not being closed-minded. And this guy, literally, everything I was prejudiced against, he represented. You know, complete fear-based lifestyle that I lived, and he was everything. He was black, he was gay, and he had HIV. He's somebody I would have never talked to, never. And what he did was he talked to me in a language of the heart that transcended all the BS in my head, like all the BS. And what I got to find out later was that none of those ideas in my head were really mine anyway. I just adopted a lifestyle that I figured I had to have in order to survive. And my survival depended on how I lived my life outside before I got to AA. And I did things and I had actions that I wasn't proud of. The book says that morally and philosophical convictions are not good enough for me. And I had those convictions. I just didn't have the necessary power to live the life that I wanted to live. So I was always in conflict. Andre, the man that brought me the message, used to say, "You're always at dis-ease with yourself." I had this internal conflict. It was inside me. It wasn't outside. There are a lot of conflicts outside too. You know, like my phone's always ringing because people I owe money to and creditors. You know, that whole game. That was my life before I got sober. You know, I woke up this morning feeling like, man, this is an amazing life because, and I got sober before. I like to say stuff like that because it makes me feel like I've been around a while. But like, I got sober before iPhone came out. You know what I mean? So I got sober before visual voicemail. That's amazing today because I can pick and choose now who I want to hear the messages from. And back then I couldn't do that. So, you know what I'm talking about, so you guys know. So like, I was a blackout drinker, so I wake up in the morning with a laundry list of messages about what happened, what was going to happen to me, people that were pissed at me, and then like buried deep in there would be like my mom. "Hey, I haven't heard from you in like a month. If you want to give me a call." And so I would never really get to those messages. And it's amazing today. My phone doesn't ring like that today. You know, I got people in my life that are, they call me and they say, "Hey, I'm looking forward to hearing you at the meeting today." And they call me and say, "Thanks for being part of my life." You know, when I got here, you know, men were competition and women were prey. That's how I live my life. That's what I do. I'm judging myself. Am I bigger than that guy? Am I better than him? What can I get? It's like, this is the world that I lived in. And you guys taught me differently. You know, you guys taught me to do stuff that I never even thought of. I've never thought of, and it's common sense today. You know, like things like leveling my pride, how beneficial that is to my life. But man, is that difficult. You know, it's so difficult. You know, I was a bar drinker and a club drinker. So, like, that was my life. And I always say this, but it's true. Like, you guys taught me about things that don't make any sense in my head at all. And I had to have the faith to take those actions. But, like, I was never at the bar doing the mad dogging with the guy across the bar. You know, like, we're, like, looking at each other like, "Yeah, okay, I see you, you see me. We're about to go do our little thing." I never went up to him and was like, "Hey, man, I'm feeling a little fearful. You want to go in the alley and maybe you and I could do a 10-step and then we could get resolution." You know? That's not where I came from. No one ever taught me that. AA taught me that. You know, AA taught me to show up. I'm so grateful for sponsorship. I'm so grateful for Andre. He's not with us anymore, but I love having someone in my life that every single time I think of them, I get emotional. Because that's the power that I found here. You know, that's what I want to talk about in the 15 minutes I have, is this power in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because his message blew the doors off my life. Like, blew it. I was sitting in the back row at a meeting called Rule 62, which ironically enough, I found out later was "Don't take yourself so seriously." And anyone in Tucson that knows me knows that that's kind of ironic because I'm a pretty serious person and today I'm learning not to be with help of friends like Ephraim. So I'm sitting in this meeting with that plan in my head, and by the end of the meeting, I knew I had to talk to him. And I didn't know why. And I know now it's because he was the man with the real answer. His whole deportment shouted that he had the answer, you know. And I didn't realize that he just had this common message that we all had. I thought he was unique and that he was the only person that could bring it to me. And we talked after the meeting, and guys like Eddie were at that meeting. And there's a guy in town named John. I don't know if he's here, but he was at that meeting. There you are. Yeah. He said he was coming to keep me honest, so thank you. So So I'm at this meeting, and this profound experience happens, and like I'm starting to feel this energy, and I'm like, wow, this is interesting, and this guy's like talking to me about stuff, and he's really got my attention. We're out in the parking lot, and now remember, I came there because I'm trying to get my girl back, right? But then there was a dance going on afterwards. I didn't realize like cute girls come to AA, so like I'm in the parking lot, like trying to listen to this spiritual message and look in the, you know, like kind of that, and he's talking. Andre was talking about, I just want to congratulate you and say thanks for fighting for your life. You know, and I'm like, yeah, dude, I just can't even get my girl back. I don't know about fighting for my life, you know what I mean? And how different my truth is today, you know? I didn't realize that I had this obsession, this allergy. I didn't know anything about alcoholism, you know? I didn't know that. I had a picture of an alcoholic, and it definitely wasn't me. But interestingly enough, the guy that I pictured was, like, passed out on the couch, bald, and wore glasses. And I just got my first pair of glasses, like, a week ago. So, yeah. You know, I just didn't want to, I always wanted a do-over in life, you know, and I think AA gave me that, and the book talks about being reborn. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is what happened. My first drink was Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. I knew people were going to know what that is, and there's a guy that I met a long time ago, and he used to always say that before, he drank a bottle of wine, and I felt the same way. He said, you know, and before, I was amazed before I was halfway through, you know, the bottle going down. And, I had this electric feeling, and life was good, and it didn't like fix me, it didn't do anything. It was just my friends do it, and I like the way it feels. And from that point, I went from that to a military career being destroyed. I was doing some pretty high-profile security work with some people that are considered fairly important in the country, and My days went from, it looked like, I used to be the guy that had the girls and the parties and all that stuff, and I had this big ego, and I thought I was, you know, Mr. Tough Guy. And my last days drinking were me and a bottle of Jack Daniels and a German Shepherd, because I worked with bomb dogs in his kennel, because that was the only thing on the planet that could stand me for any length of time. You know, I did more fist steps with that dog than I can imagine. And I used to cry myself to sleep at night. On Friday night, everybody would be leaving. I'm getting ready to go, and they'd be like, yeah, Jay, what are your plans for tonight? I'm like, yeah, I got big plans, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and I'd lock the door behind them, they'd all leave, and I would go do my thing. Is that right now for me?
Yes.
And I would crawl up in that kennel, and I would just hang out with that dog, because I was lonely, I was scared, and I didn't know how to, I just didn't know. They were talking about last night, the speaker said, what the book talks about, my problems were piling up in me, and they were becoming astonishingly difficult to solve, and I just didn't know what to do. And things started getting taken from me, and like I said, I showed up here and went to a meeting with a busted plan and met Andre, and now my life's different, you know. And as a result of working these steps, I get this amazing life today. Like, I'm doing things today that when I was new and going to my first conferences, I'd be like, God, I hope that's me someday. I mean, I don't want to admit it, because I don't really want to commit to AA, but people talk about going to school and living this life. I'm living that life today. Like, I'm in school. I have this amazing job. You know, the military basically asked me to leave. Stripped me of everything I had ever earned, and today I have an employer that respects me, loves me, treats me with kindness. Doesn't pay me enough, but you know. As a result of my lifestyle today, I have a woman in my life that like has never really had to she's never had me get physical with her, and that's a part of my past, you know. She's never had me make fun of her. She never had me verbally abuse her. And those are things that like I couldn't change before I got here, and today I have that, you know. I'm actually faithful. I try to live my life with kindness today, and I have been reunited. This is the last thing I want to say. I'm about to get kicked off, I think. But one of the most profound experiences I had in my life was that my dad walked out of me when I was 2, and I looked for an excuse for all my behavior, you know, in my childhood, and there just isn't. I'm just alcoholic because I have an obsession with my allergy to the body. But my dad left me when I was 2, and when I was 9 months sober, it had been 25 years since I'd ever heard or talked to him or anything. And Andre got me to take a look at that in the 9-step. And I got to see that at 18, my part is I'm making my dad the excuse for my bad behavior, and I needed to own that. And I did. And I sent him a letter. He sent me a birthday card. We got reunited, you know. And as a result, I have a relationship with my dad today that doesn't meet my expectations sometimes, but he's in my life. And things like that happen here. Things like that. Guys like me get purpose here. Lives get rebuilt here. So I think I'm about out of time, but I just want to say, if you're here and you're accepting any of the challenges that Alcoholics Anonymous is putting in front of you, thanks for fighting for your life. Thanks.
Our main speaker comes to us from Edmond, Oklahoma. Please help me welcome Jennifer.
Hey y'all, I'm Jenny S. and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jenny. We love you, Jenny. Lots and lots and lots. And bunches.
Love y'all too. It has been by the grace of God and sponsorship and action in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober since April 7th, 1998, and for that time I'm truly grateful, especially today. Thank you. I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me and for being so kind, and to Arizona for being so welcoming. I was going through, and it's an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous because I too came here as a taker. You know, and so to be allowed to give back to something that's given me the opportunity to be a mother and a daughter and a friend and a sponsor and a sponsoree and a productive member of society that pays taxes is phenomenal. Now, those weren't my goals when I got here. I wanted to learn how to drink where nobody knows about it, and I thought that's what Alcoholics Anonymous stood for. I'd never heard of AA before in my first meeting. And so I'm grateful to be here, and thank you to everybody who's been so welcoming. I hope you know what you have. This is phenomenal, young people. I'm going to cry. I'm a crier. I didn't cry for like 10 years in sobriety, and then the dam broke, and now I can't get it to stop. Here's the real me. It blows bubbles sometimes out my nose. You know? And that's just how that works. So I should have brought tissues. But here's the thing, is as the day was going on, I was starting and I was thinking about all the people to thank. I've been taken out to dinner, and I've had people pick me up, and I've had new people that let me drag them around, you know? Because when I'm uncomfortable, I don't know what to do. And so I go and I look for a new person, and I look for the lady in the corner with the sad, sober eyes, because that's what I've been taught. And it works. You know, and my friends back home that stopped in their day and they prayed with me over the phone because I need God. And when I got here, if you'd have told me that, I'd have probably punched you. I'm here to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I was brought up in a home where I was beaten in the name of God, and I had a deep resentment. You know, and my parents loved me and they did the very best that they can. But whenever I got here, I drank at them and it was their fault. They did. They're phenomenal parents, and I love them today. But this is my experience, is that I am spoiled rotten, is the truth. I have loving parents. I have a hard worker for a father. I never, ever went without, ever. And I got a lot more than most kids get, you know. And my dad worked real hard, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she loved me, and she didn't want to see me go down the path I was going down, and she did everything in her power to reel me in. And there was conflict, because I was a budding alcoholic that hadn't had a drink yet. And so I was crazy, and I was crazy, you know? But not y'all's version of crazy. I know that sounds weird, but I called one of my friends, and I'm like, I'm in a sea of tattoos and screaming, and I've heard more cuss words from behind the podium than I've heard in like a year, you know? And I don't know what to do with all this, and I'm kind of my home group is real structured, you know, and we dress up at speaker meetings, period, out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do that when I was new, but today I do, because if you're dropping off your daughter, I hope you see a lady that's taking care of her. You know, I don't want to be the girl that you don't want your daughter hanging out with. I came here knowing how to do those things. You know, I knew how to manipulate, I knew how to steal, I knew how to lie, I knew how to hurt you. And I want to set a different example in Alcoholics Anonymous. If those things worked for me, I wouldn't need you. And I need you. And I wouldn't have stayed. So I'm rambling, I'm uncomfortable and nervous, and I hope this makes sense at the end. I can't believe I'm the spirituality speaker, because let me just run through real quick. Here's the deal. I was a dork, I've always been a dork. I love numbers. I like to read. I love it. I loved school. I always wanted to be the best. And then there was this guy named James, and he did better than me. And he got like the 100 when I got the 98, and I got mad. So why try? You know, and then it caused some chaos. And this is like when I'm in fourth grade, you know, and this caused some chaos. This is the turmoil in my life, you know, and I had a phenomenal life. But it was stupid. You know, I got mad that you weren't doing what I wanted you to do, and I wanted my dad to be home, and I wanted my mom to quit hitting me, and I felt responsible, you know, because when I was little, it's something, I just wanted something, you know. I sought education, I sought, I'm not athletic, and I wanted to fit in somewhere, and so I sought out church. And that was my experience, and my family kind of followed me. And then my mom had a mental twist, and she began to hear God. And I did not know that that was probably not God. I took it to be true, and I thought God hated me. I thought that God gave me a mom that didn't love me, because moms that love their little girls, they don't beat them, and so God must not think I'm lovable. You know, and I've talked to so many women in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who know what that's like. That for one reason or another, I am different. For one reason or another, I am not the one that fits in, and you just don't understand. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, for the first time in my life, I walked into a room and I felt like everybody knew what it was like to be me. And you wanted me to believe in God, and you wanted me to get on my knees and pray, and I wasn't willing to do it, but I lied. You know, and just so you wouldn't ask me to leave. So I had my first drink when I was about 12. I was never going to drink. I was never going to smoke. I was a kid that carried her Bible to school. I was at the Dark County Fair in Greenville, Ohio. It's a little bitty town that a lot of my family's from. And afterwards, I was hanging out with my cousin, and she got a six-pack of beer. And she put two in the fridge, and she drank two, and she gave me two. And we're on the phone flirting with a carny. And if you've never been turned down by a carny, you don't know what it's like. You know? And I have to explain, I'm a dork at heart. And you know how you are when you're a little kid? And I say little, I was like 14, which is old for some of the people here, you know? But I had my first drink when I was 14. And I'm on the phone and I'm describing myself to this carny, you know, trying my best to flirt. And boys and booze are like soup and salad. They go real well together. And if you got one, you got to have the other, you know? And so I'm flirting and I'm telling him what I look like. And he says, well, you sound like Pippi Longstockings. Oh my God. And I gotten that my whole life, because I now weigh almost 50 pounds more than I did when I graduated from high school. I've been real small. And I had long, stringy red hair, and my front two teeth, when they came out, they didn't want to grow back for a long time. I'm legally blind but correctable, so I wear Coke bottle glasses normally. And like I said, I have allergies. So I'm the kid walking around with a Bible under her arm and tissues in her pocket and bubbles coming out my nose all the time, you know? And it's just awkward and uncomfortable. And this guy says, you sound like Pippi Longstockings. And here's a miracle that alcohol does for me, is it fixes me and it works and it changes my perspective. You know, I did look like Pippi Longstockings, and I was just the ugly duckling, you know? But what it was is, for the first time in my life, I thought, well, you just don't know what you're missing. You don't know. I'm all that, you know? And it fixed me. Alcohol gives me the great huh. And it makes me feel comfortable. And I did not have very many opportunities to drink. My parents are strict, and they watched over me. And they did their very best to protect and shield their daughter from the lifestyle that I was about to live. And it wasn't enough. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to trade you for alcohol anytime. I will trade my dignity, my self-respect. I won't mean to, but you don't understand, I got a drink. And so I just kind of followed it, and I didn't have very many opportunities to drink. I would plan and I would scheme, and I'd get caught and I wouldn't be allowed. And one of those particular, I don't know about you, but when I think about it, sometimes the idea of being allowed to drink is as good almost as the first drink, because I know relief is coming. I know through the week, as I'm planning to go to that party on the weekend or go do whatever, I'm uncomfortable, and it's coming, and it's closer, and it's closer, and it's like reaching that finish line, you know, and the there's this one weekend I was going to get to go stay with my cousins. I was 15 years old, and my parents were going to be out of town, and at the very end they found out my cousins were planning on throwing a party, and they weren't going to let me go, and how dare you, you hurt me one more time. You know, and so my great thinking is that I thought, I'm going to show you how upset I am, how much you've hurt me, you know, and they were trying to protect me, but I was so angry, and I blamed them for everything, and I said, I'm going to show you, and so I lit my house on fire with my family inside, and I walked past and watched my little brothers eat cereal while they didn't know that their house was burning. And it didn't do much damage. I'm a drama queen, and I try real hard to do bad things. I'm not very good at it. You know, I hear about people going to prison and all that, and I'm like, no. I thought about it, but I was chicken, you know? I am scared, and I'm not the girl that went out and ran and was crazy and all that. I'm just a drunk. You know, I sat on my couch and I drank and I thought about what I was going to do, and alcoholism stole my motivation, you know. And so I did not wind up getting to be, I didn't get allowed to go to that party like I thought I would. You know, I thought I'll light my house on fire and they'll let me go for sure. And I went to a psychiatric ward. And and I told them about my home life, and they said, oh, honey. That's what I heard. I don't know if they said that, but I heard, oh, honey. I'm not an oh, honey kind of sponsor, because it about killed me. And I told them about my life, and I told them about what's going on behind closed doors and about the lies that we were keeping, and they suggested I move out of my home. And so I moved in with an aunt and an uncle, and I blamed my parents that I didn't have a place to stay, you know. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to hurry. In that home, it was phenomenal. It was the first time in my life I ever had structure and security. And I did not know that I craved that. The big book says that we're undisciplined and that I don't quote well, but that we let God discipline us with this program. And it was the first time in my life that I had structure and discipline, and there were consequences for my action that I was held accountable for. And I hated every minute of it, but I felt so safe. And I will tell you that I go to a home group today where we are held accountable. And my sponsor will call me up in a heartbeat, and I hate it, but I feel so safe. And so I just kept drinking. I want to get sober. I'm trying to qualify myself, but I don't. I don't have the big glorious stories. I can tell you that I wound up, my parents sent me to boarding school because I didn't know what to do. I kidnapped my roommate. I had my first blackout. I came to 5 days later. I walked away from, I took the ACT's trip in acid, and I did really well, and I got a full ride scholarship, you know, to go to one of the best women's colleges in America, and one of my heroes spoke there, and I was drunk in the parking lot, and I couldn't go. And I'm going to talk just a bit about drugs in my story, and it's not because I don't respect the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's because when I got here, I did not know I was an alcoholic, because alcohol did not bring me down. Alcohol fixes me. It makes me comfortable. It makes me at peace. I have to drink to get out of bed, to put on my dirty clothes, to go wait tables so that I can drink tonight. And if I don't have a drink, I can't get out of bed, so I can't go to work, and so I don't know how I'm going to drink tonight. I've got to drink. It fixes me. You just don't understand. The things that I had to do to allow me to drink as long as I needed to keep from having the shakes real bad is what my problem was. You know, and so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to learn how to drink without anybody knowing about it. And I was willing to not drink for a little while to learn how not to do drugs if I had to. So I was told I was allowed to belong in Alcoholics Anonymous because I desired to stop drinking today. But it was literally just today. For my first 9 months of sobriety, I planned the keg party I was going to have when I got a year and see how many alcoholics I could outdrink. You know, I just didn't get it. And so I lost my train of thought. But about drugs. I lied. We come to AA as liars. I don't know why I thought I was different in that, but I lied a lot about what I did because I was afraid that if you knew that alcohol wasn't my problem, that I was really a drug addict, you'd let me leave. And there's a solution that I knew lived here. I love AA. I love AA. It's the only place I've ever felt real comfortable.
I love it so very much. It's like my home. And I feel like I grew up here. My sponsor says there are no voids in God's world. And everything I've ever needed, I found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a God that lives and breathes in here. And I just know it. And I'm so grateful because I came here so empty and void. And so I ran around a lot and I drank a lot and I don't know really what happened. I came to one time in Ohio and the police were looking because there was a drive-by shooting done in my car. I don't do that sort of stuff. But somebody did in my car. I guess I gave him the keys to do a beer run. So I started carrying around a video camera so I would remember what happened. And, you know, and that's the glory of my life is that, you know, I watch my life pass by in fast forward the next day. And I live for the blackout, you know, because I'm full of fear and I'm terrified and I'm afraid and I don't know what to do. And still today, the dance, I was just like, oh my gosh, they're like bouncing, you know? And oh, what do? I'll watch, you know? Like, oh, you know? And I'm full of fear. And so I live for the blackout because I'm gone. I'm numb. I'm zoned. I'm not here. I want out. Thank you. I'm too chicken to check myself out. And really, I don't want to. I'd rather take everybody else out and just be me. Thank you. You know? And I have some anger issues. I tried to kill some people. Well, I said, not really. You know? I'm glad you guys laugh at that. They did not. You know, but here's what happens is that on a number of occasions, people would stand in between me and my drinking, just like my family did whenever I was younger. And I'm not successful at being bad at all. I suck at it. It's just God's grace. And so what happened, I would routinely be in these relationships with people that thought I should quit drinking, and they would go about their business trying to help me stop. And I would get angry because how dare you? Every time I have physically hurt somebody, it has not been while drinking. I have never lit anybody on fire or cut anybody or anything like that drunk. Never. Not with a single drop of alcohol in my system. It was when I was getting ready to drink and he stood in my way. And that's scary, you know, because I don't, and one of the women that started my home group talks about that she didn't realize until her sponsor pointed it out that her selfish and self-centeredness doesn't mean that she's out to hurt you. It doesn't mean that she's trying to take from you or do anything like that. It's that I don't even think about you when I want what I want. I don't even take you into consideration. I just go for it, you know? And I did that on a number of occasions. So basically what happened is that I wound up with this guy and he broke a glass table over my head and I called my dad. And I'm like, Daddy, he did this, you know? And I didn't mention I'd put him in the hospital a couple weeks before and he'd almost bled to death, you know? But I play the victim. You know, and it's your fault. And that's what I do. And so I called my dad, and I come from a family of really little women and really big men. And the guys showed up at my front doorstep, and we loaded everything up, and my dad moved me home. And I came back to Oklahoma. My parents had just gotten divorced. It was the healthiest thing they ever did. And my youngest brother had just gotten caught bringing drugs across the border. And my dad needed some help, and he wanted an example for my brother, and I wasn't the example he was looking for. I went for a couple weeks without drinking whenever I moved back. I was in therapy 5 times a week, and I had my therapist's number on speed dial, you know? And I was miserable. I laid on the floor, and I would cry, and I would just think about everybody that had done me wrong. And I was such a victim, and I just didn't see my part anywhere. And what happened is my brother threw a party and I had a couple drinks and I'd never been back to therapy. You know, I was better and alcohol fixes me. And I wasn't the example my dad wanted, so he asked me to leave the house. I'm not capable of making a living. You know, if you'd have told me when I was little that I would stay with people just because I needed a place to stay so I could spend my money on drinking and I put myself in the positions I did,
And women alcoholics know what that's like. I would have told you, whatever. You don't know. I'm smart. I'm going to be somebody. And I traded everything that I cared about for the right to drink. And so my dad bought me this little house, you know, and his intentions were he was going to pay all my bills for like 6 months so that I could get a nest egg and learn how to... I told you I'm spoiled. You know, and I hated this man for it. That's the ridiculous part, is I was given everything in the world with a little bit of tarnish on. It's like having silver with a little bit of tarnish. It's still silver. It just needs worked on. You know what I mean? And I had such phenomenal parents, and they really tried hard, but I hated them because of a few things. You know? And so what happened is he bought me this little house, and I was supposed to start working and get a little nest egg put together, and no. No, I just drank always. Always, ad infinitum, always. And I always had, though, because my family doesn't drink. I don't come from drinkers. I have a grandfather that died of alcoholism. You know, my parents don't drink. My mom had, I used to say my mom needs a drink real bad. And she had, on her 50th birthday, she called me and she said, "My Jenny, I just had the most marvelous experience." You know, and she's explaining to me this glass and a half of wine that she drank and just how wonderful it was and the way it tasted and smelled and the company and all this. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't really mean it. No, 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 no. My mom has never had a drink since. She's going to be 60 next year, you know? And I'm just like, I don't get that. I don't get it at all. So I'm not used to drinking. I don't know it's abnormal to drink in the morning. I didn't know that till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought everybody drank beer during the day and whiskey at night. That's what I do. You know, I just drink beer like it's water, and I love it. I keep a keg in my closet. I like beer. And, you know, I thought it was normal to have blackouts. The people I was around were used to me doing it. You know, I just thought that was me. And I thought the way that I lived was normal. I thought it was normal to live in a house with broken out windows and things like that, and just to run around. I sought out lower companionship. And so the people that I was around were like me. So what happened is that I started having the shakes, and I thought it was really cool. I wanted to drink like a man, to be like a guy. I wanted to be tough. I just suck at it. And so I started having the shakes. And it was the day after Halloween, actually in 1997. And I had this party, and I'm supposed to drive everybody home, and I just can't quit shaking. And what happened is that I began to be able to not keep enough alcohol in my system to sleep a little bit and drink and not be sick. And I started like waking up, and I'd take a drink and I'd puke, and I'd take a drink and I'd puke, and I'd take a drink and I'd puke, and I'd pray for the drink to stay down because it hurt. And I would, and it stunk. And I had a toilet that fell through the floor of my house, and we put it in a spare bedroom, and we just used the hole in the floor. I wasn't raised like that, you know? And I would just be so sick, and I would pray to God that something would stay down. And then a little bit of warm beer would settle in my stomach, and I could just breathe. And I could drink a little more, and it would stay, and I'd breathe. And then I could get a couple of beers in me, and I could go to work, you know. And I had a roommate at the time that said, "Honey, you don't need to do that. Try this." I don't know what I was doing. It was white. I smoked it out of a light bulb. I stayed up. And to this day, all I know is that I paid for it. You know, and I'm not real, I've been told, "You probably did this, you probably did that." I don't know. But what it did is it stole the blackout from me, and I hated it. I hated it. I hated seeing what I was doing. I hated seeing the misery, the madness, the anger, the stuff that I was doing to the people that I loved. I had to be present for my drinking. And I hated every minute of it. And but I couldn't stop, you know. And so about 2 months before I got sober, my little brother sat me down and he said, "Jenny, I can't come around you anymore. I'm afraid of finding you dead." And I love my brother. I love my brother so much. My brother would take a beating for me in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? I know what it's like to hide in the corner and to hide in a camper and have my brother go protect me. And my brother has always been the one that was there. He was my God. I pick men for gods, you know. Not today, but it's just been a pattern. And, you know, and he was first. And he said, I can't come around. And the pain on him was extreme. My dad was getting married that night. And he said, Jenny, I can't come around anymore. I'm afraid of finding you dead. And please don't drink at the wedding tonight. Don't embarrass our family. And I promised him I wouldn't. And I meant it with everything in my heart. It was the first time I ever tried to quit drinking. And so I went to the wedding. And there was an open bar and all that. And I knew I couldn't hang around. And so I left. I was at the wedding. I was at about 10 minutes of the reception. I left and I went to a friend's house. And I woke up the next morning sloppy. I mean, I'd puked on myself. My head was in a cat box. You know, and I smell of alcohol, and I've been drinking, and I thought, I wasn't going to drink. I don't remember starting drinking. I don't remember what happened. To this day, I don't remember. I wasn't going to drink, and I woke up the next day, and I thought, God, I hope he doesn't find out. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. And a few hours in, I started to drink. And I thought, well, crap. I'm only going to drink until I go to work. But I got to have a couple drinks to get through lunch, you know. And I tried one day at a time to stop drinking. From the day that I told my brother I quit to the day I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't go a day without drinking. And it was my only goal. I just wanted to not drink for one day. And from the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous to this, I've not had a drink. And I don't know why, except that there is a God. If you want to stay sober, ask him for help. I believe that God's will for me is to be sober so that I can be a productive member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that when your daughters come in, I can help them. I think that I don't think he wants me to be drunk, and so I must, he'll help me, if that makes sense. I came in and I had a huge resentment against God, and I refused to pray, I refused to get a sponsor, I refused to work the steps. I spent 2.5 years just as sick in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous as I was out there. What I did is day three. Is that the first day I was there, I came in with a friend. Her attorney suggested she come to Alcoholics Anonymous so that she wouldn't get into trouble for some stuff she'd been doing. I came along. I was sober at the time because I know I'm a blackout drunk. I wouldn't remember what happened. I came with a pad of paper and a pencil. I like to take notes. Yeah, and I was going to learn how to drink where nobody knew about it. That was my goal. And I came in and there were people talking about things that I had done, like coming out of blackouts and not knowing where they were and the look of disgust on people's face. And they were not drinking. And they talked about having been sober for things like 4 and 5 years and 9 months and 17 years. And I was just like, oh, I'm in the wrong place. You know, this isn't what this isn't what I meant to do. I'm her friend, you know. I am the friend of the alcoholic, and she needs you. I don't, you know. And afterwards, a big biker guy came up, and he did exactly what the big book talks about. He 12-stepped me. He shared his experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And he said, and honey, why don't you just try not drink until 8 o'clock tomorrow night and come on back? And I did. And the next night, this lady named Gina did the exact same thing. And I did. And the third night I walk up and I'm standing at the door and I'm like, God, if you're out there, I hate you, you know? And I'm going to walk in and I'm going to know somebody. And I'm thinking about these two people that have 12-stepped me. And I walk in and there he is. And I found God. And I later called him husband. And my experience is that I got sober April 7th, 1998. I had my daughter. My oldest daughter 11 months later. I got married shortly after that. And then I had my second daughter November 10th, 2000. And in that period of time, I did the best to work the steps out of the big book on my own. And it didn't work because I'm thinking with an alcoholic mind. And it just didn't work. And I'm not praying. I'm a bad example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that God drank. You know, I was in labor with my youngest daughter. By this time, I know enough. The lady that 12-stepped me, I got to watch her at 4 years of sobriety get busy with the life that Alcoholics Anonymous gave her. And I got to watch her give that life back because she started drinking. And in a few months, I watched her lose her kids and her home and her legs. And, you know, and I knew enough to know that I'll never be able to drink again. You know, I knew enough to know that if I drink, I'll probably use drugs, so I better not drink anymore. And I just kind of sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I wondered when it would be my turn. Because the people I ran with eventually drank again. You know, we didn't work the steps. That's the solution I know to Alcoholics Anonymous, is to work the steps so I can clear away me, so God can enter, so I can be a service to you and help you work through the steps. And that's about all I know to do. You know, it's what works. And so basically, I'm in labor with my youngest daughter, and I have her, and I'm getting up to take a shower, and the nurse comes in to wheel my baby out. And I say, oh, no, you don't need to... You can leave her in here. Husband's here. He'll watch her. And she goes, no, I can't. He's drunk. And I said, he can't be drunk. We're alcoholics. I know, right? Yeah. And I look over and he's fallen out of his chair drunk. And I don't know what to do. I'm not going to meetings to pick up chips. You know, I'm not trying to look about. I didn't have any clue what AA was about. I had no idea. And I'm such a taker, and what it was is I was just empty. And so he took my purse and he left. And I'd have told you that morning I was never going to drink again, you know. And what happened for me is that I had to. And I didn't want to. And everything in me was screaming, do not leave. I'm a runner. I'm a fighter. I don't mean to be violent, but I am. And I knew that if I left, I wasn't coming back to my babies. I love my girls. I never was going to be a mom, and when I found out I was, something happened. I think it's a gift from God. I was terrified of being a mother because I thought I'd hurt my little girls. You know, and my sponsors taught me how to play games with them, how to change diapers, how to feed them, how to get off welfare so that I could provide for them. Everything that I value in my life I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so, so grateful. So what happened is that I almost left them. And in my head is this thing saying, don't stop. No, stop. Don't. No, just stay. Just, you can't drink. You can't drink. But I have no mental defense. I have no higher power. He walked out the door, so I'm going to go chase him down. And he's drinking, so I'll drink to keep him. And I don't want to drink. By this time, I don't want to drink. Not for my brother, not for my kids. I really don't want to drink. It terrifies me. And I didn't have the power not to. And so what happens, I'm getting up. My baby's laying in the bassinet. She's about 3 hours old. And I'm buttoning up my pants and I got to tie my shoes. And I'm getting ready to go. And the thought ran through my head, God, if you're out there, I need somebody to pray for me because I don't know you. God just walked out the door. And the phone rang and it was my mom. And my mom said, baby girl, I don't know what's going on, but I think I need to pray for you. And it was just that quick, and I know that God loves me. I know that we've got miracles, and we've got seconds and inches, and God gave me mine. And my mom walked me through the process of putting my gown back on and laying back down in bed, and she started to pray. And my mom hears God, so she prays well. And the last thing, she lives in Ohio and I live in Oklahoma, and she's 14 hours away, and she's throwing stuff into her car while she's, you know, and she said, just hang on, I'll be there in 14 hours. My mom doesn't like Alcoholics Anonymous. She thinks it's a cult. But she said, just hang on and we'll get you to your meetings, because when my mom doesn't know what to do, she knows that you guys do. You know, she actually came and saw me get my 10-year chip. It's the first time she ever stepped in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that I go to a group where we act like ladies, because my mom felt comfortable there. And so the last thing she asked God to do was to send somebody to sit with me until she should get there. And what happened is that I opened my eyes from praying and there was a nurse standing there. I know today I'm a nurse. We don't have time. We don't have time for the patients because we got to put out fires. And that nurse stayed with me for an hour. And she held my hand. I did not know it, but my doctor would typically have said, well, take something, you know. He was out of town. And the doctor that was there standing in was an Al-Anon. So while I'm in labor and I'm like, make it clear, hey! He's like, easy does it. You know, because I got in all my charts. You know? Medical charts, I'm an alcoholic because I got no mental defense. You might think I'm hurting. I don't want you giving me medicine, period. If I got it in my system, I'm screwed. I know that. I don't take Benadryl. I don't do any of that. It's fear-based. I know it's true. I don't care. I really don't. I don't want to lose my sobriety. And if there's an action I can take, I'll do it. And so what happened is that I'm so grateful I didn't have anything in my system right then. So the nurse sat with me and she left, and somebody from AA came and sat with me for a few hours, and they left, and this couple came in, and the lady was in Al-Anon. I'm going to borrow this book. And this is what she did. "You are not in AA." And she just was bringing that book on the end of my bed, and she was just mad. And she said, "Honey, there's nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous that says that you flirt with the boys and you play hacky sack and you go out for coffee all night and you don't go to work in the morning. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all you're doing. You are a taker in the rooms of alcohol." And she took my inventory. And it's about time somebody did. I wasn't doing it. You know what I mean? And she said, "You need to go and get a sponsor that will walk you through the steps and get a home group, and you've got to stop, because you might not have drank today, but you will tomorrow, and you might not tomorrow, but you will the next day. If you are not participating in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will not be able to stay sober. And it will get worse, and your babies will be motherless. Worse yet, they might have you as a mom." Because I'm a violent drunk. And so what happened is that my mom came in town, and my mom raised my girls for the first 2 weeks, and I sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I whined about what he did to me. And my friend that took me to that first meeting was sobering up. And I bumped into her, and we lived parallel lives. We drank together, we got sober together, we have babies. My youngest daughter and her youngest daughter are 2 days apart. And her him did the same thing my him did. And I bumped into her at a meeting, and she was okay. And I said, "What? What are you doing?" And I'm going to meetings. And she says, "Well, you'll never believe I met this lady. You've got to come meet her." I went to church to meet my sponsor, because that's the next place she knew to find her. I'm not saying like I was supposed to, but it was like a Saturday, and she goes on Sundays, and I wanted to meet her right away. So I waited till it was over, and then I walked in. You know what I mean? And I went up to her, and I asked her to be my sponsor. I'm going to preface, and I'm going to say that I will say things that my sponsor said, and it's the way I heard it. My sponsor cuts to the chase. She tells me first in a kind and loving, gentle way. She provides direction and instruction, and she takes me through the book. And I'm kind of like the puppy dog that meanders out by the road. And you're like, "Come here, come here, come here, come here." And whenever it steps out, you're like, "Come here!" I hear the, "Come here!" Most of the, "Come here, come here, come here, come here." I'm like, "Da da 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 da." That car looks pretty. You know what I mean? And so, mind you, I'm going to preface this. When I say something about my sponsor, and it might seem harsh, it is the, "Come here." It's not the, "Honey, come on." You know? And so I have a sponsor, and she prayed about sponsoring me. She had me pray about it. I told her I did. I didn't. You know? I was told when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I could pick a doorknob, I could pick whatever I need to. I picked a tree in my front yard. And it so worked. It so worked. I don't suggest it to anybody. But the God that I know meets us wherever we are. And he met me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was so afraid. I was so afraid that it would backlash and that it would hurt. That it wouldn't be full of love, that it wouldn't be full of anything, that it would be like what I knew. Because I put my faith in people, and people fall short. And then I think I relate that to God, you know? And so my version of prayer when I was new is I would walk out my front door, and there's this big tree there, and it was like 50-something years old, and it was strong. And I wasn't. I felt like everything that we have tornadoes in Oklahoma, and I felt like I was just being whipped around. And everything that happened in my life would just kind of blow me around. And this tree was steady and it was strong, and whatever was keeping it there was good enough for me. Strength was my power. You know, lack of power is our dilemma. That was my first higher power. And so I would wake up in the morning and I'd go out and I'd be like, "Morning." And I'd come home at night and I'd be like, "Still here." And that was my prayer. That is the best I had to offer. And then I was willing to pray with you at the open and close of meetings. After a while, it took me a couple years. And we'll speed up. holy cow, I have 5 minutes. We're going to really speed up. What happened? Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm going to go real fast. What happened is my sponsor took me through the steps and she gave me some simple directions. She said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to pray on your knees. I didn't. I lied. I would normally tell you about that, but I'm out of time.
She go. It's okay. Don't tell me.
I'm not. I'll hurry. I'm going to hit some high points real quick. She said, I want you to pray on your knees. I want you to read 86 through 88 out of the big book every morning whenever you wake up. And I want you to do your best to follow that. I want you to call me. Here's your call time. Every day at this time. I want you to call two women in your home group and ask them how they're doing. And I want you to begin to get out of yourself and try to care about other people. This is now your home group. You will be here on these nights. You will be here at least 15 minutes early and you'll shake hands with all the new women that come in the door. And you're going to have a job there. And pray, sponsor, call her, read the book. But, you know, she gave me some specific things to do. I'm super nervous all of a sudden because I'm barely sober. 30 minutes.
Sorry.
Probably a God deal. God's probably like, come on, get to the point. We all know what it's like to drink and be crazy, get sober, honey. You know, and so what happened is that, you know, one day at a time I began to do these things, you know. She had me get a job. I'm not a worker. You don't understand. I don't need to work. I have my dad, you know. And she said, that's his money. It's not yours. You know, we're fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And I took that him back, and he got sober for a little bit, and then he drank again. And the amazing thing that happened is that the second time when he drank was about a year later, maybe a year and a half. And what happened, what I had done in that time is I had worked through the steps. My sponsor took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to tell you real quick, whenever I was doing my first step, because I was afraid that I really wasn't an alcoholic, I wanted to be, I wanted to be, I wanted to have your solution, I wanted it so bad. I was afraid I just didn't fit. My alcoholic mind told me that I was different. My sponsor had me sit in a lot of open speaker meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had me read through the first part of the big book where it describes alcoholism, and she had me write down a drunkalogue. And I had to write, real quick, one page, what it was like. And it was phenomenal whenever I wrote it down, didn't think anything. And whenever I read it to her, I thought, my God, I'm an alcoholic. An alcoholic is only this. When I put alcohol in my system, I don't know what's going to happen. I got that for sure. And whenever I'm not drinking, I want to drink because it fixes me. I got that. You couldn't have convinced me whenever I was 14 years old and I took a couple of drinks that like 12 years later I'd be willing to leave my children for it. You know? That I would walk away from everything important and valuable in my life just because I had to drink. That's not normal drinking. People don't do that. That is a disease that's outside of my control. Those were not choices. That's a drive. You know? And there's something inside me that says you must drink. I gotta have something besides that. And so I, you know, my God has evolved through sponsorship. I have been nasty to my sponsor. Nasty. And she always answers my call. Always, you know? And my God today is like that. It doesn't matter what's going on in my life. He's always willing to answer my call. You know? And I love the UFC. I don't know if you guys know what that is. It's the cage fighting. And that's awesome. And my God's like my UFC coach, you know? You go out there and you watch them and they're out there and they're fighting and they're doing their best and they're getting beat down. And they come back and their coach says, this is what you need to do, and gives them good, firm direction. And they go out and they can either follow that and it goes better or they cannot. But no matter what, when they come back, that coach is there. God allows me to go out and live my life and he's right there in my corner today. You know, I didn't know that I would find that. I did not know. So we're going to speed up. So he drinks again. The second time, this is what happens. I get a phone call. My husband says, I'm not coming home. I'm drinking. It hurt just the same way it did that first time. I felt like there was an elephant standing on my chest. And what I did is I got down on my knees and I said, God, I'm hurting. Please help me. And I'm not one that normally does that, but I did because I was desperate that moment. You know, and I called my sponsor, and she's a principal. She was in a meeting, and so I left her a message, and I asked her to call me back. And I called, and I made arrangements for my daughter so I could go to a meeting that night. And then I called two of my friends. I did not ask how they were doing. I told them what was going on with me. And my sponsor called me back. And she said, honey, what's going on? And I told her. She said, well, what have you done about it? Well, I've prayed. I've called my sponsor. I've called two women. I'm going to a meeting. And she said, good, now I want you to read this part of the book where it talks about wife or no wife, job or no job. And she had me begin to read that. And she says, I promise you, if you continue to do the things one day at a time that you've done, it will carry you through this. That the God that you have found in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I know you don't believe in, but I do, he will walk you through. And that has been my experience. It means in prison today, and I, you know, I'm a single mom and I love it. That's that 180. What is it? A complete spiritual change, spiritual experience? I suck at that stuff. You know? But the psychic change, that's my picture of it, is that when my life, when I don't get my way, I want to leave my kids to drink. And in a year and a half, whoops, I'm hitting stuff. And in a year and a half of my life really looking the same on the outside, but just taking a few different actions, from wanting to drink and leaving my kids, to my first instinct is to get on my knees and ask for help, that I don't have the power to do that. God has done something for me I cannot do, you know? And so I got active in service work, at the district and the area level, and I started sponsoring women, and I saw AA all around me being done differently, kind of like, you guys are people I would normally not mix with, for real. Although I love it. I was like, can I bring them home with me, you know? And it's been fun. And so I started getting involved in service work, and I love it. And in about 9-10 years sober, boy met girl on AA campus, and I fell in and out of love. God knows how to get my attention. It typically follows a guy. It's my Achilles heel. And this is what happened, is it didn't work out. He's a good man. I have a lot of respect for him. He's a good sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know what those sort of relationships look like. I've never been involved in one that's not been violent. And this is the first guy I never hit. I should tell you that whenever my sponsor started sponsoring me, she told me if I ever hit anybody again, she'd fire me. I wasn't allowed. And so I did not. For 9 years, I prayed in my... I asked God for help not to hurt people. I don't want to be that girl anymore. I don't want to be the girl I walked... I don't want to be the girl I am today. I want to be something better. I want to be more of what God wants me to be. I want to change. I want to keep... I want to be somebody you trust your daughter with. You know, and so what happened is that we split, and he had had this girlfriend that couldn't get sober when he did, and they split up, and she got sober 14 days after I gave back the engagement ring, and we're at Icky Paw in Oklahoma City, and I'm supposed to greet on Sunday morning, and I walk up, and there's this girl, and I'm like, oh no, not gonna do it, you know, and I walk up and there's this girl, and I'm like, that's his new. And I know that he's supposed to be mine. And I know what I do. When I want something and you're in the way, I don't think about you, I get what I want. You know, and a lot of that's changed in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm afraid. I'm afraid of hurting this new girl. And so an Al-Anon lady comes up to me and she said, "You, it's not about you." You know, she took my inventory. I love Al-Anons. They're willing to do that. And she took my inventory and she told me to go up and keep my commitment and do Alcoholics Anonymous whenever it was inconvenient. So I got to stand next to this girl, and she was absolutely precious and she was desperate. And we got to talk about what it's like to go have Mexican food without drinking a Dos Equis. And how in the world do you mow your lawn without drinking beer? Exactly. You know, exactly what do you do? And if you would have told me that I would find in relief. I mean, I prayed on my knees that morning, because by this time I'm praying. I pray every day. I'm so grateful for prayer. By this time, I'm asking God, help me. Help me. I want to see you. I just, God, I love you. But I want to know you better, you know? And I'm on my knees and I'm asking God to reveal himself for me. And this is outside of my God box. You know, and I'm there and I'm talking to her and she's precious. And some guy comes up and he goes, "You should ask her to sponsor you." And I'm like, that's not really healthy. You know, I can't. but I can direct you to somebody, and they look at me like I've committed some terrible sin. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. We both kind of love the same man. I don't think it would be appropriate. And she looks at me and she goes, you're that, Jenny. And she said, thank you so much for treating me so kindly. And I said, thank you for letting me. And then the meeting started within 30 seconds. And I had to go inside, and I haven't seen her really since, except across crowded meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous like this one. And as I'm leaving the conference, I'm driving up, and I tell you, I've got such a temper, you guys, and I hate it. I hate it about me. I am my mother. My mother was the person I hated the most. I hear in meetings that people hate their alcoholic parent. I hated my mom. I hated her, and I drank at her, and I acted like a good daughter, and I made my amends, and I call her every week, and I tell her I love her. I hate to say I tried to mean it. Today I love my mom, and it came out of this experience. I'm pulling up out of this parking garage, and I've been asking God to help me not hurt people for a long time, not because it's the right thing to do, but because I don't want to be my mom. I'm almost done. And what happened is I'm pulling up, and it occurs to me I don't know what kind of car she drives. And I know that sounds really silly, but I stop and I just start bawling. Because I have not gathered any information with which to hurt this girl. None. I'm not going to cut her tires. I'm not going to pour anything in her gas tank. I'm not going to put booze in her drink. You know? I've done crazy stuff in sobriety before I was sober. We're talking about... I pinned my husband up against a tree with a Lincoln Town Car when I, you know, a couple years sober. I wasn't a good example. So to be so changed was phenomenal. And I knew I was forgiven. I have slept with the thought that I could have killed my little brothers. That I hurt people that were your children. I have kids today. If somebody treated my daughter the way I treated your son, I'd have shot him. Period. You know, I'm not, no, I probably wouldn't have, but I would have thought about it a lot. I'm actually really chicken. You know what I mean? And I'm driving out, and it was just like I knew I was forgiven. Because God gave me the thing I couldn't do, is it was release from my temper. And He gave me release from alcoholism. He gave me release from rage. He's given me release from so many things. And from that day to this, I haven't had that overwhelming blackout anger that I know. And I'm so grateful for that. If you'd have told me it would have come by working with the girl that was going to get everything I ever wanted, because she did. They're happily married ever after. I would have said, there's no way. I'm not doing it. And God had bigger plans for me, you know? And so I was thinking about it, and I thought how terrible it is in self-pity, and I was thinking about how bad it hurt to love somebody and they can't hear it. I don't know if you've ever sponsored anybody or loved anybody, and they just, for one reason or another, blocked off from that, and it hurts. And I'm sitting there, and I'm praying, and I do Sudokus because they're cool. And I'm doing my Sudoku for the day. And this person that I love keeps popping up, and I think, God, help me, you know. And I say a little prayer, and I put them into bed with God, because that's what I do. I wrap people up in God's lap, and I ask Him to protect the people that I love that I can't protect. And the thought of my mom came into my head, and I thought, what? You know, and I thought how hard it must have been for my mother to love me for 33 years, and I couldn't hear it. Because my mom tried to save me from alcoholism. She might have done it with her fists, but she was trying her hardest. My mother grew up in an environment where nobody watched over her, and she was placed in a position to be harmed because she did not have protection. And that's all she was trying to do. And I called my mom, and I told her how much I love her, and I've talked to her 3 times since I got here. And I've told her about how wonderful you guys are, and she knows it. She still thinks we're a cult, but she thinks that God might be using it to get us to where she thinks we need to be. And that's awesome. And I'm going to wrap up real quick, because here's the deal, is that this year I've wanted to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you where I'm at. I got to sponsoring a bunch of women, and I got full of pride and ego, and they all fired me, and I got a resentment. I got one left. My friend sitting back there and brought me Diet Coke. Thank you. you know? And my sponsor changed sponsors, and we just, nobody ever said we don't do that, but I thought it. You know, I've had the same sponsor since I got one. And there's been change, and I just got a resentment against my home group. Some of the things that I shared with girls whenever I was doing their fifth step got spread in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not supposed to be ashamed of the past, but for some reason I was. And I just got a resentment against Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the truth. And I, about six, and I watched my dad give my little sister the wedding I always wanted and the life I always wanted and the protection, and I got a resentment against my family, and it's just been ugly. And I got ungrateful, and I got unwilling to do the things that I did before. And I've missed committed meetings. I don't do that. I was taught about foot prayers before I learned how to pray on my knees, and it's whenever I get up and I move my feet and I say, God, I don't know how to talk to you, so watch my action. Here I go. I love foot prayers. And I came here this weekend as a foot prayer. Because I didn't want to tell you guys that I don't know. You know, I love AA, I don't want to leave AA. And I got a resentment, and I'm writing about it, and I see my part, and it's here, and it's not here yet. I don't see it. I've not been allowed to make amends because my sponsor has explained to me that I don't know the true nature of my harm. And I got to go sit in a hospital room with a kid while I was here that got stabbed. And I got to take a meeting in. And I got to see the true nature of my harms. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are your babies. And I have a harsh tone with some of my sponsorees. Because they're not doing what I want them to, and I care about them, and I want them to stay, but they're allowed to make choices. Like God allowed me. And I've learned so much, because this is so not a crowd I would mix with. You're allowed. And I'm kind of rigid, you know? And Alcoholics Anonymous is alive here, and I, you know, I don't know what's to come. They said, I'm so grateful that you have welcomed me and invited me. And just to be willing to take a little bit of action because God's there. You know, I don't want to leave AA. I don't. So I'll go home and I'll make some amends if my sponsor says it's time. Thanks.
Thank you, Jenny. Here to read a vision for you, help me welcome Ephraim.
My name's Ephraim, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ephraim. We love you, Ephraim. Lots and lots and lots. And then whole bunches.
Thank you. This is a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us, more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for... Excuse me, I'm a little choked up from what I just heard. great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
May I please have a hand?